This one must have been an issue.
You heard what he said? Yeah. I must have been an issue.
We've started now.
Okay.
Well, I'll do an intro.
I need to look good for the camera.
We had a long train ride to get here where this could have happened.
That's true, but I was talking.
Well, I'm glad you finally made it because, you know, sometimes you get on a train, you fall asleep and get lost.
I thought you were going to make a Jewish joke.
I was going to... A Jewish joke? Wow, you're rather mean. Jewish joke. I'll tell you, I give you a Jewish joke. You wouldn't believe.
Dad is prone to a Yiddish accent. That's what he's doing.
Well, that was a time. There was a time. And I mean, now it's disappeared. The young people, they don't remember.
Yes.
Yeah. And...
Where's my water? Somebody stole my water.
We almost got to see Fiddler on the Roof. Eve has never seen Fiddler on the Roof, which
that's
I
true.
Find very strange.
Well, that's
I
my
love
father's
Fiddler
fault.
On the Roof. Really?
I've never seen Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, my God.
But yeah. That's your fault. No offense.
How? How so?
So you're going to blame me.
You're a big girl. How dare you?
I had a whole childhood.
You're an adult.
I'm missing out on the Jewish canon. Yeah,
I don't know if it's written by Jewish people. Is it?
Dad?
Fiddler on the Roof? Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Could have just been by a fan. It's certainly...
What?
It's based on the tales of Shalom Aleichem.
Shalom Aleichem?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's
yeah.
that?
Aleichem Salam.
Yeah.
fanciful writer, and he used it... It's part of the idiom, and it's really caught on, so everybody uses it, whether they realize it or not. There's so many things like, you know, how's business? Don't ask. Don't ask. But anyway, you never ask me how's business, but...
How is business?
Well, don't ask. Business. Depends on the business, you know? Well,
this is a Seinfeld joke.
I give you the business. Yeah, monkey business. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All
right. Two Gentiles meet in the street, and one says to the other, how's business? And the other Gentile says, good.
Did you hear that? Sorry. What?
Say that again, the last line.
He said, two Gentiles meet in the street, and one Gentile says to the other, how's business? And then he says, good. The Gentiles.
Oh. The Gentiles.
They're Goyim.
But Eve has also never seen Yentl.
I've never seen Yentl.
Which Yentl is one of my favorite. It's a truly insane. If we're going to go through all the Jewish musicals, of which there are four.
Is it a musical?
Yentl is a musical. Oh, yeah.
Dad, I'm beginning to feel a bit resentful here that you never...
Well, I got some stories about Eve and feeling resentful. She was born resentful.
Yeah. I'm like, Dad, we should have gone
over... listening to your father.
We should have gone over rules. Okay, go ahead.
So when did you insist that Eve move to Korea?
Well, the only thing I can recall there is, you know, I was in Korea during the war.
Okay.
And so...
The Korean War.
Korean War.
I know.
Okay, but it could have been...
Okay. And she knew that. I don't know how she picked Korea. I think she went with the wind at the time. the whole thing baffled me that she was into comedy. Because I was figuring, you know, she'd get a good education, you know, maybe she'd go with one of these hoity-toity schools, you know, really first class. But she got her degree, and after that, nothing pleased her except comedy.
It's odd.
It is odd.
Yeah, a similar thing happened to me. A lot of people.
It's
a curse.
You were going to law school, right?
I was at law school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But I knew I would get in comedy.
Yeah.
At some point. But, I mean, what year were you in Korea? When were you fighting and deployed in Korea?
I was in 1952 or 53.
Okay.
The treaty was signed in 53.
Were you part then of the... I'm going to get this right, but is MacArthur had a surge that he wasn't meant to have? Am I getting this right? Where he went further than the parallel, and he said, we can keep going.
Yeah, MacArthur disobeyed the high command, is really what it was.
That must have been the last time there was... Well, that happened in an American army.
Well, you know, they gave him a tremendous reception here in New York.
Yeah.
And I was in the crowd. And he came by in a car and waved to everybody... And throngs of people, they love MacArthur. Maybe it was rebelliousness, maybe it's just because we knew he was an experienced soldier, you know. And I think he said, old soldiers never die, they just fade away.
I think that's true. Patton was hit by a car.
Oh, really?
Am I getting that right?
I don't know.
Patton had a very abrupt death.
Really?
Well, but then maybe...
But not at war.
No.
Matter of fact, in the movie, it shows that he was in a car at the end. He was speeding.
Am I getting that right?
Yeah. I think you're right.
Which movie, then?
Patton.
That's
right. It's called Patton?
It's called Patton. Yeah. It was written by Francis Ford Coppola, and then they butchered it.
Right.
But still... But there must have been a vibe for some of the, like, so Eisenhower gets to become president after the war. But these men must have been they've loomed so large in the imagination.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't realize until we went to, I don't know if you ever came with us to the Museum of the War in the Pacific.
Where was that?
It's in Fredericksburg, just outside of Austin, in the German Hill Country.
No,
but they have all the presidents afterwards. They, you know, and they go look up until Reagan,
right.
Up until George Bush Senior, they're all involved in World War II. That World War II is like the defining, you know, not until, yeah. So Bill Clinton is the first president who did not serve in the Second World War.
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But just how odd that must have been to have these people. And the military is not as groovy now.
No.
No one, you know, there was a brief Petraeus people thought could lead, but it's all different.
It is. It is. But, you know, you asked me before about Korea and Eve. She has a mind of her own. I'm going to go back here with a couple of stories about Eve.
Oh. Okay. We can start there.
Okay.
When my wife, Linda, passed away, it was very sad. She was young, and Eve was perhaps hurt by it tremendously. And she was very jealous of the women that I was dating.
Oh, Dad.
Of course.
Oh, that's a good story. She said, "Where are you going tonight?" And I said, "We're going to go to probably go to a bar." And we really were going to shack up, but I wasn't going to.
Oh, Dad, this is such a mistake.
I like this story.
Oh, wait a minute.
Eve might have to leave the room for the podcast. We're having a great time.
So anyway, she said to me, she said, "Call me." I said, all right, I'll call you." So anyway, I was with Sandra, and I said,
"Your wife now,
my wife." And I said, "I got to call my daughter."
Hey, Sandra.
I got to call my daughter. So I called Eve, and she said, "I want you to come home immediately." And I said, "Eve, I can't. I'm here on a date, and you've got Sandra there." And
my babysitter's name is
babysitter,
Sandra.
Yeah.
My dad has a thing for women in his life.
And she said to me, "You either come home or I'm going to sue you." I said, "What?"
I was seven.
She said, "I'm going to take you to court."
Or eight, yeah.
Yeah, right? So
you, 7 or 8 years old. Yes, I meant it, and I still might.
I'm sure we could have very similar...
You have similar stories.
Okay, but here's
no leniency with this one. A real give an inch, take every pound of flesh. It's really.
So when my wife died, and she lingered for almost 2 years, it was terrible. Eve needed to have therapy, and I could see that immediately. But it wasn't so easy. I don't know how many therapists we went to. Eve didn't like for this and didn't like that, didn't like her looks. I mean, I've gone crazy trying to find a therapist for Eve. Finally, I found someone, but what happened is I didn't have therapy through all this period. And because I was going to all these therapists, I said, you know, maybe I could use some therapy. So I inquired some friends, and I recommended this guy who was previously a rabbi, and now he was a therapist. So I went to see him. And he said, "I know about your history." He says, I understand what's going on." He says, "But tell me, how are you coping? What do you do to cope?" And I said, "Well, I try in different ways to interest myself in things. But the main thing is that there's a kind of sadness that I really can't quite get over. But I dream." He said, "Oh, you dream?" And now he got interested. "Tell me about your dreams." I said, "Well, I'll tell you, you know, one dream maybe you..." It recurs a few times.
James, you'll love
this. I was a window washer at the Empire State Building, and I was up on the 30th floor, and I was washing the window, but I wasn't really washing the window. I was gyrating because there was a nice gal opposite me. We were strapped together on 30th floor of the Empire State Building, and I was having one grand old time. He says, "Well, really? That's really very, very strange. Tell me, what else?" I had him going now, you know, the rabbi, you know, part of him. "So what else? What else?" I said, "Well, I had a tremendous ejaculation." He said, "What?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I looked down, and there were actually people on the street were drowning in my sperm. I could see their feet kicking up in the air. They were drowning in my sperm." And I would tell you, he had the most disgusting look on his face. He said, well, all right, look, next time, well, I only have one more time, but he didn't want to mess with me after that. But because he was a rabbi, I was titillated by how far I could go.
Yeah.
Well, now I knew how far I could go.
This is I think, a fear of certain people with therapy, is that you start performing for the therapist. They're really meant to be there to help you.
Right. Uh-huh.
And there's a sickness that a certain kind of person has where suddenly it all becomes, can I win the sympathy of the therapist? Can I make the therapist disgusted? Could I get to the point where the therapist doesn't want to see me anymore? That would make me feel very powerful.
Right, you relate to this. I'm sure.
Oh, I 100% relate to that. Uh-huh. They sent me to a therapist when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And anyway, I don't go to them anymore.
That story I had as a joke about you.
Yeah? Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, because, so the joke was basically like my dad being like, that you confide too much in me. And that you're like, I had this dream. Because also you used to talk about,
I had no choice. You're always,
I was just there. I know. Yeah. It's called a child.
Yeah.
And as I said,
not all children are like that, Eve.
Sorry, so because you also mentioned in the past that it was over Brooklyn. You were flying over Brooklyn and that you saw people drowning in your sperm.
No, now I understand it.
Right. And so I said,
I would never make the people in the financial district.
Right. It's just the Brooklyn. Yeah.
But in Brooklyn, let them drown.
So you said, I had this dream. I was flying over Brooklyn and I was ejaculating. And as I looked down, all these people were drowning in my sperm. And that's I said to my dad, Dad, I'm 9. Get a therapist. But, because in the joke, I don't say that I was a child when you were telling this to me. But you did tell me when I was a child. I think I would have been 10, 12 the first time
I'm
I heard
amazed.
That story.
Yeah.
I'd love to have that dream. I've been on the road for so long.
She gave me so much trouble.
Oh, my God. Is this what this is about, Dad?
Let Milt speak.
Because, you know, she liked my stories. I told her a story every night before going to bed.
It's true.
And she kept asking me about, I told her about this Farmer Brown.
No, Mr. Squire.
Squire. See, she remembers.
Who are these people?
Figments. My dad is a fictional story.
I was making these up.
Yeah.
But what I did know is that she remembers what I was saying.
And two daughters.
Night, or next week, she asked me, whatever happened to Squire? I said, who? She said, the fellow who was taking the land away from Farmer Brown. I said, oh, my God. So she listened to all my stories. On the other hand, Michael, my son, he said, tell me about the atomic bomb. I said, what? He said, I want to know all about the atomic bomb. So between the two of them, between the atomic bomb and Farmer
Is this
Squire,
the one who grew up to be the chess player?
Yes.
Yes.
He's a chess teacher now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which at some point I have
He's
to.
He's a master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very bad. I'm an enthusiast.
Oh, it's too bad. You guys could play a game. I bet you my dad would beat you.
I bet you would.
Well,
we can do it. I'm happy to do it. We'll do it at the end.
Okay.
We'll do it at the end.
Yeah.
I gotta weigh you out.
We'll see that, or go for a drive. Up to you.
But now am I correct in that you were thinking of becoming a rabbi yourself?
Me? When you were very young.
When you were
before your dad died.
My father was from Budapest, and so he made me go to synagogue regularly.
He was very religious.
But that was 34. Did you say you were born?
35.
So yeah. When did they come out from Budapest?
Well, my father died when I was 12 years old.
Okay.
But when did he come from Budapest?
When did he leave Budapest?
Oh, he left as a young man. He left
the 20s?
I looked it up.
Well,
no, before that.
Yeah.
Okay. I looked it up.
He was in his teens.
I think it was in the late 1800s, because I looked up the Ellis Island records.
I know it was late, yeah.
I think it was 1899.
He came up with his brother. Interesting story about that, because they had to walk all the way from a little town in Budapest to Bremerhaven, Germany, to get a ship. They walked.
Yeah.
So anyway, stopped at this farmhouse.
People were tougher then. People were tougher then.
It's
they went inside and they knocked on the door, and the lady looked and she says, come around the back. So they went around the back, and the lady made them two sandwiches. She covered everything up nicely, put it in a bag. They were delighted, so they found a shady tree. They sat down to eat their sandwiches. And my father looked, and he took one bite, and he said, ham. He says, Trafer, and he threw it on the ground. And his brother said something like, Schmuck, we're starving. What are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
So the brother grabbed the sandwich and he ate them both. Now, that story is significant because when they got to this country, my father opened a dry goods business. And his brother went into the iron and steel business and did a lot of fabrication for the Tappan Zee Bridge here in Westchester.
It was a bridge that was very famous.
So he was making it. My father was a, you know, like, he threw that ham sandwich on the ground. It was indicative of, you know, his business acumen, which was below zero. He was not a very good businessman.
I'm told that he would take give bribes.
Oh, then, no, that's my mom's father. Al.
Also owned a meat. He was a meat inspector. He was the inspector.
Yeah, Al Lettich.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of people working in the meat business.
No, it was dry goods. So he's my grandfather on my dad's side.
I thought dry goods. I thought that was
no, that was quilts, pillows.
Oh, I take it back. I don't. That's not a term that I was familiar with.
But I thought the dry goods can also.
I thought
be
small
like,
goods.
No, I think I thought the dry goods can also be like rice and.
No.
Okay. Oh, no. I'm sorry, no. But no, my grandfather on my mom's side. Took bribes. He was a meat inspector who took bribes in deli meat.
Let me say this about the business acumen, though. People still need pillows today. The steel built business in America. I mean, you'd want to be in pillows, wouldn't you?
Well, but
I don't know.
The steel side
Bethlehem
of the family.
Bethlehem Steel doing nothing. At the
There's
moment.
Like Ellenbogen Streets in the U.S. There's plastic surgeons.
Uncle Louis, yeah.
Those people made it. My dad's dad did not make it. He died poor, right?
It's better to be poor. The meek inheriting the earth, you know.
Yeah, I think.
But in that era, late 19th century.
Yes.
Manhattan is like 45% Jewish at that time. This is my understanding.
Hugely Jewish, right, when you were a kid?
Very heavy.
But
yeah.
Still really anti-Semitic.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Right? Because you remember that. Tell them about the song.
I don't know. If you've hung out with the Jews in Brooklyn, they're very anti-Semitic
as
well.
That's true. Well, they're anti-Israel.
Some of them are just anti-Semitic.
That's true. Like me. Wait, tell them about the song that they used to sing, the kids.
Oh, me and my friend Tony, we come from Italy. We drink our booze and kill all the Jews. Me and my friend Tony. I was sitting on a stoop with friends singing that song.
You were singing that song.
Yeah, my father came home and said, get in the house. Get in the house.
I mean, but like, it's like a huge, when did that, was the high watermark maybe of Manhattan.
Of Jews.
Of Jewish people in Manhattan. And then it just.
They all moved to the suburbs.
But who's the, people move to the suburbs and who comes in next? Who's the next big wave?
Well, after the Second World War is when the big immigration began.
Yes.
And they came, and they came, and they came.
And from where?
And mostly from Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Romania.
Ireland, right? Italy? Was that later?
Well, that was later, yeah.
Okay.
But the Jewish wave, actually, it started even before the war. But after the war, because of Europe, and they were...
Oh, you're talking about the Jews. He's saying, when did who replaced the Jews when the Jews left New York?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, the Irish are a big category there.
Bring it a little closer here. Yeah.
The Irish are a big category.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that was after the war.
Yeah,
that was. You laughing at me that I?
No, it just fills me with great pride that we came here.
Oh, because you're Irish. Yeah.
We were here before as well. I mean, St. Pat's. When did that get thrown up? That must have been
St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Oh, I don't know. Do you remember?
But there's also this wonderful. There's this pub that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's called. I wish I knew what it was called. Did we go there? It's the oldest Irish. It's the oldest continuing pub in America, I think.
No, I don't know.
In Manhattan.
In Manhattan, yeah.
What's it called? It's not...
McSorley's?
McSorley's.
Yeah. Oh, I know McSorley's Ale House. I know McSorley's.
It was really the rudest people I've ever met in my life.
Because it's a very big tourist attraction.
Well, you go there so that they can be rude to you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You got to buy two drinks at a time.
Right.
And the food is just disgraceful. It's a white onion that's been chopped and a bad cracker and just cheese from a supermarket. But it was wonderful.
Right.
It really awoke Irish consciousness within me.
I can't. Do they have peanuts on the floor? No.
No.
Do they used to, Dad?
Sawdust.
Okay.
Sawdust.
Yeah.
I keep seeing that, and I don't understand it.
Because Dad used to work in Manhattan too. Like, you stayed for a long time, and then you guys used to go out after work to all the different pubs and stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Sure. But you know, it was interesting. The life of Manhattan was so easy, and you don't remember. I mean, we remember now, but during the period, we didn't realize how good it was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when a loaf of bread was 11 cents, you know, things like that. But there were six kids in our family, and my mother and father, it's eight of us. So they were thinking, because we became superintendents, because we got this sprawling railroad flat for all of the kids and all the beds and everything. And we got that, and our duty was to furnish the linen, to clean the building.
Because you had other floors. You had the whole building.
We had the whole building,
right.
And that's where I met, you know, a whole bunch of cross people. I remember Midgets. There's a midget or two around
here. We go. Yeah. Dad loves a midget.
I love the midgets. We don't have many of the midgets in Australia.
Well, I think that they don't really exist much anymore. Because of genetic whatever testing.
But you still have people who will have their midgets here.
Right. Yeah.
In Australia, the midgets are just aborted.
Right. Okay.
But here,
really?
One of the first things I thought walking around America was, my goodness, there's a lot of midgets here. I don't call them that. But I go, where are our midgets?
And then I realized,
we've been killing the midgets in the womb. That's where the midgets have all gone.
Well, Dad had
Down syndrome people as well. I got to America. I said, my goodness, there's a lot of Down syndrome people here.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not as though there's a higher rate of Down syndrome in the United States. It's just that there are evangelicals
who
have the Down syndrome.
Well, Dad's uncle was a midget, Uncle Irving.
I did not know there was midgetry in the family.
He was a
slum landlord midget.
Say the whole thing.
A cab driver.
But hunchback. He's hunchback midget slum lord cab driver.
Jewish.
And let me racist. Tell you,
this guy's good with the ladies.
Yeah, I mean, and racist.
Oh, a terrible racist. Yeah, we were walking on Broadway, and so I said hello to somebody, and he said hello back, and Irving said to me, he's Irish, isn't he? And Irving, his wife, Margaret, she said, how do we feel about the Irish? He says, they're all right as long as they don't throw bottles out the window and piss in the holes.
Yeah, we've got a problem with that. We've continued that issue to this day.
Don't forget to join Zaza, James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan Patreon. Four beautiful extra content.
Well, when did the homosexuals move into the village? That can't have always been like that.
I can tell you, I was just a kid. I was a kid once, And so we went down to the village. It was an experience for me. And there were a lot of gay people down there.
Just checking the camera,
but who knew from gay,
sure,
right? But some were sitting outside playing a guitar, singing, having a really good time. I figured, these people, they call them, at that time they were called queer, they weren't called gay. I said, but these people know how to have a good time. And so my Uncle Irving said, I was telling this to my Uncle Irving, the hunchback slumlord cab driver. And he said, well, they're not Jewish, are they? I said, Irving, look, there are Jews, they're good and they're bad. Look, on the east side, Delancey Street, they're Jewish and they're poor, and they hold their kids up to the window, and some of them urinate right under the ground. He said, I can't be Jewish. I said, they are. I have some friends down there. They're Jewish. And I rubbed it in. I said, they're Jewish, Jewish, Jewish. And he said, Swifty, you amaze me. He says, if they're bad people, you don't hang out with them. I said, Irving, what are the Jews? How do you do? What are you saying? He said, look, I run a business. He said, I have a rooming house. I have tenants in there. He says, and these people are like animals. I said, well, then they pay your rent, right? He said, well, yeah, they pay my rent. He says, sometimes I spit on them. He says, I put the money in my pocket. He says, I said, so Irving, you've got to deal with people no matter who they are, don't you? He said, well, in my business, you have to when you're running a rooming house business. But that's not the same as friendship, of hanging out with them.
I tell you, this guy's not beating the allegations.
No.
And I said, Irving, I can't explain to you all of this stuff. I said, he says, you're so angry. He says, who's angry? I'm not angry. He says, I just wish that we could exterminate all those goddamn black people.
Oh, well, it's good to know you were a liberal at the time, and you were open to not doing that.
I was a liberal, yeah. He said, what, are you a liberal? I said, yeah. He says, I don't have any.
But now, this is what we're talking about, the 50s. This is early 50s?
Yeah, exactly.
But then he ended up in the newspaper. Irving.
Why?
Remember?
He what?
He ended up in the newspaper.
Well, yeah.
What did he do?
This is a good story. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. My phone rings. I was a bachelor living in the city. It's Irving. He says, Swifty, you got to come up here right away.
I love that he calls you Swifty.
I said, what do you mean? Why? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Why are you calling me? He says, my tenants are all passing out like flies. They're sick.
And they're vomiting.
So I get in my car in those days. I was parked outside. I drove up to 95th Street and Columbus Avenue. And sure enough, they were out there, throwing up and miserable. So I said, what is the problem here? So one guy says to me, he says, gas, gas, gas. I said, was something with the gas? You have a gas line? And yeah, we got a gas line on sort of building. Apparently there's a leak, and they were sucking in this gas, and they all got sick.
This guy gassed his tenants?
Accidentally, but
he was talking about trying to exterminate them, and then all of a sudden gas is going through?
Right. So I said, Irving, you know...
It's like the end of Esther.
So why did you call the police and get an ambulance? He says, I can't. I said, why not? He said, do you know how many violations I have in the basement?
Oh, my goodness.
So what happened is... So someone finally did call the police, and they came. And it was maybe 2 days later, I read in the paper, Irving Hirschfield, well, first the superintendent, hit with fines, illegal people living in the rooming house, etc. It was Irving. It was my uncle. And apparently he got hit with a fine, which was somewhere around $2,000 when they came. They saw all the violations. The ceiling was falling apart, plaster. I mean, violations all over the place. So that was Irving, and he had to eventually... I got it. He had to eventually sell the place.
Well, I romanticize slums.
You really do.
It's an ongoing problem that I have, because I never really think about how bad it must have been.
Right.
But and you can assure me it was bad. It sounds like it. But also, I mean, this is partly why real estate costs have gone up so much. It's so much more expensive to build a place, and you have to keep it maintained, and then we have to have sprawl. And I mean, there was a time where you would just say, sort it out amongst yourselves, and if people die, they die.
Yeah.
But that overall, the rent will be lower.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So you missed that time.
Well, I think there's a midpoint. Like, clearly we can't afford the standard of housing that we have now.
Right.
The economy is out of step with...
the reality.
We deserve something a little... People would... If you could halve people's rent and it was a little closer to a slum, they would take it happily, I think.
If it wasn't like a new building with all the amenities. Yeah, I think... I mean, like, it was a little bit shitty, but still habitable.
I think we would happily have faster, shittier housing.
Right.
If it was cheaper.
So what you're talking about is really timing.
Yes.
So after the Second World War, everybody came back from the factories, and New York was, rents went sky high. They formed the OPA, the Office of Price Administration.
Yes.
And that's where we made our money.
You in your rooming house.
In the rooming house.
Yeah.
And we bought the place just before that, in late 44.
How much did you pay for it, remember?
The total price for the brownstone was $5,000. We put $500 down.
On a building in Manhattan.
I know, it's crazy.
I still have the receipt.
You got to hold this close
but
to your
is this what you do? But is this when rent control comes in there?
After the war.
Exactly. And so with rent control, the government is paying the gap? Or they're just not allowed to change it?
No. The government isn't paying any. The government...
So they just punish
if
landlords.
If you want to raise the rent,
yes,
you've got to let the government know. Or the tenant has a right to go to the Office of Price Administration.
But then family to family, people just hand down secret rent control deals through the years. This is nuts.
Well, it's not secret. It's allowed.
I know, but I mean...
I mean, think about it this way, though.
Some of it's hinky.
If your family moves into an apartment...
Yeah,
it's rent controlled, and the landlords do get certain benefits. Even if they don't get money, they get certain tax incentives to have a rent controlled property, right?
They do.
Yeah. And so then, if you grow up in this apartment and you're renting it, you don't buy it, and then but your parents pass it down to you, that's like your family home. And yeah, it's rental.
Well, but I'm not opposed. I mean, part of me is a free market person.
Right.
Is scandalized.
Right.
But then part of me is proud for the people of New York.
Right.
For the old New Yorkers, that they have so many, like nowhere else in the country.
Mm-hmm.
These scandalous deals to help each other.
But, but very few
move
now.
In, there's so many of them.
There's not that many. You should look into it.
If you're going to move in, you've got to have one of these accredited moving companies, and they're going to charge you this amount of money.
No, I don't think that's true.
I think that is true.
Depends on who you are, where you are.
Do me a favor. You really have to move that closer.
Okay.
You can rub it all over your lips.
Yeah, you can literally put your beard. It should be touching your beard.
I know, but I'm so tempted. It's red like an owl. I want to take a bite out of it.
You should do that. It's really disgusting.
So in the 50s, I want to talk about the village in the 50s, because that's what you talk about, you know, the Jews not want to go there and hang out. Yeah. But Lenny Bruce starts up around that time.
Oh, yeah.
And stand-up comedy begins for the first time in these dinky little venues.
Right.
So how old are you when that starts happening?
Well, I was a teenager then. I guess I was 13, 14, you know.
Did you ever see him, Lenny Bruce?
No, I couldn't.
Couldn't get in.
You got to get 18, 21. Yeah, yeah. They were sold out all the time.
But I wasn't really. Sure when did he die?
Oh God, I forget.
Oh, lickety split. He's not around.
He died young. Yeah, yeah.
But something starts. Something that wasn't happening starts happening. You know, yeah. no one was telling jokes in a coffee house basement before then.
I know I'm talking to the right person, to you, because I was attracted in the beginning to Charlie Chaplin. I couldn't get enough of Charlie Chaplin.
Of course.
Still obsessed.
And then it was W.C. Fields. Uh-huh. I love W.C. Fields. Yes, my boy, I can't be all bad. And then it was the Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
Groucho, Chico, Harpo. They were up in Amsterdam Avenue, 95th Street. I grew up in 82nd, just off Amsterdam.
Wow.
So they were practically neighbors. But then came Woody Allen.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
He loves Woody Allen.
And I
think he was innocent.
Okay.
I started doing papers. I was an English major. And I did a paper on this. I did a paper on this, on comedy. And I compared the comedy of W.C. Fields with Sir John Falstaff in Shakespeare's work.
Okay? Yeah.
And I got an A. And I'm still friends with the professor. And he said, "You never did that." And I went and I dug it up and I came down to the village. I said, "Here it is."
Yeah.
And there it was. And he gave me the A and he wrote it, "Great idea, great idea." You know.
Yeah.
So I'm really into that. But it occurred to me.
Well, there's a dignity at W.C. W.C. Fields has a certain.
Dignity?
There's a dignity. There's a. That allows him to fall and be frustrated.
It's a double comedic effect.
Yes.
To look at him with the bulbous nose and the way he walked and the funny hat. It's funny. And when he opens his mouth, if you listen to what he's saying, that's funny.
Yeah.
Called the double comedic effect. Now, Groucho was witty, but he also had that crazy walk.
He was walking silly, and he had a silly look.
And Harpo with his curls and his crazy face.
But then Woody Allen is trying to be and is successfully being a sex symbol. And only, I think, because women have started taking the pill. But it's undeniable. It's undeniable that he becomes a... That women found him sexy at the time.
Yes.
You know, he's going on the Dick Cavett show and having a push-up competition. And all these beautiful women are always interested in him in picture after picture. And that doesn't seem to... I mean, you know, you go, well, of course he's going to bed with the 14-year-old in Manhattan. How old is she? Is she 14 in Manhattan? Is she Hemingway's granddaughter?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But he's...
Oh, Mariel Hemingway?
Yes.
In Manhattan? Oh, she's 17 in the movie.
Fine.
Yeah, but I think she was younger in real life.
She's very young.
Yeah.
She's very young. But it's also a very happy ending in the movie when she decides to stay.
What did she say at the end of Manhattan? You got to trust people. You got to believe in people.
Well, gee, I don't know. She's such a
sweet. She turns around and she's like, you know, but you got to trust. You got to have a little faith in people or something like that.
I think about how Woody Allen is kind of like a Joe Rogan. This would be a strange parallel.
He doesn't know too much about Joe Rogan. We've talked about
it. I would say Joe Rogan would be the most famous man. There's a kind of man that exists after Joe Rogan.
After?
After.
Okay.
Like that Joe Rogan is a guy.
Yeah.
And now there are men who do all these jiu-jitsu men, bow hunting men, comedy men.
Right.
And they want to be Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan has shown them a new way. It's possible to be a man.
Right.
And I think with Woody Allen, I don't know who he's necessarily tapping into. But there are... Hugh Grant is a Woody Allen.
Right.
All these men are just doing Woody Allen.
It's kind of nebbishy. You know what nebbish means? How would you describe nebbish?
There's like a new archetype.
Like an intellectual kind of anxious man?
Yeah, who has no strong manly features.
Right. Yeah, so Hugh Grant would be that guy. Like, who else?
But of course, Woody Allen does. I mean,
right. You think so?
Oh, what everything I read about him as a man is not him as a clown. He couldn't be that neurotic. He'd fall apart. He makes a movie every year.
Well, yeah, it's
the
true.
Tyranny of the will you have to do to get people out of your way.
And he writes his own material.
Writes his own stuff. And as a stand-up, fantastic. Yeah. Like, really, that stand-up first record is as good as anybody.
He just walks on stage and he's a small, skinny guy, you know, and he has big glasses, you know, and he looks up peeringly. He's funny immediately.
Yeah.
He didn't open his mouth.
Yeah.
And he's funny.
My ex-wife was violated. But it was not a moving violation.
Is that what he says?
Yeah. He does terrible.
Horrible things, yeah.
He's very nasty as well, but it's so affable.
Yeah.
When does Woody Allen, that's the late 50s, early 60s?
They have the same age, 60s. Same year.
No.
Yeah, we're exactly the same age. Yeah.
Well, not the same birthday. Same year.
Oh, not same birthday, right.
Right. Yeah. Oh, here comes a hanky.
Both with a younger right, lady. And
Dad and I fight about the hankies all the time. When you were sick, recovering from the hospital last year, and I was staying here, there was a point, because his nose was running, because a couple of years ago you had an accident, you broke your nose.
Yeah.
So it was running more. So at one point, he's just recovering right here. You know, there's seven hankies, like little piles around him. And he was sleeping. And I started to pick up a couple of them because they were used. And he woke up and he was like, "Don't do that." I was like, "Dad, you have seven." And he was like, "I need them all.
It's a bygone. People don't do it anymore."
What's that?
The embroidered hanky.
It's not embroidered, but he loves a hanky.
It's something about, and no one in our generation is a hanky person.
It's true. But yeah, that's.
I should be. I get very.
Yeah, you should have a hanky. But I'll tell you, I've learned a lot of compromise. In just those moments, I'm like, do I want to?
Wait a minute. You don't have a hanky?
You're not leaving here without a hanky.
I have tissues around me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he meant to make you coffee, but instead you can give him a hanky.
I've had coffee.
He's a Yankee. I give him a hanky.
Yeah.
Okay, no hanky. I never met him.
But this one is trouble. This one, I love Eve. He's a dear friend. I got around with Eve. But when you begin these stories about the stubbornness, I think. We were at the airport.
I knew this was going
to
happen,
We were going the same way. We had to split up.
Oh, you're talking about that? I thought you were talking about when we left the bags. I went back.
I could do 100 stories.
When we landed, I kind of told my dad a little bit about it. I didn't really go into the details about the taxi thing.
Oh, it doesn't matter. But we apologize afterwards. We do. No one else has this back and forth with the people who open for them.
Yeah, it's true. I work for James, but so often, we always go, "Oh, I think that one was me."
You're smart, good company, so funny, and so you go, I will deal with
the rest.
Some other things, but, you know, if we have an argument about whether we're getting an Uber or a taxi, I can't believe this argument. We're entering the fifth minute of what really should just be. Anyone else would just go, "We'll do it your way," and you go, "Thank you very much." But instead, it's a battle. It's will. It's control and it's the will.
Yeah.
But it's smart and wonderful, and so it's fine. But if you did, through an accident, lose 20 IQ points, you're off the tour.
Yeah, I know. I really have to keep it sharp, you know.
But that's also, we also apologize to each other. I think that's a sign of, you know, a certain way of being raised, that you're able to have the difficult conversation and get back together. Japanese?
Yeah.
No, the Japanese don't apologize.
They bow.
They bow.
No, but that's not what he means.
We kind of do.
We have arguments and then we'll come back together.
It's conflict resolution. Right after you have an argument.
Not immediately, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, you and I have had plenty of arguments over the years.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. You're lucky you're still...
Do we ever not have an argument?
What the fuck do you mean by that?
We can argue. Yeah. You can argue with that.
Sometimes when my dad's annoying me, this is only... You've only found this funny in like the last 10 years.
What?
But I'll go, "Hey, Dad, has anyone ever told you to shut the fuck up?" And you love it.
You get to do that once.
No, he likes it. Maybe not right now.
No, that turns into abuse so quickly.
He still has his faculties.
She says it to me. She hits me.
But you remember me saying that to you. "Dad, has anyone ever told you to shut the fuck up?"
I must have blocked it out.
But Eve disappears from your... I mean, you were in Korea for 7 years.
Yeah.
Which also must have been very difficult to lose a daughter to Korea for a long time. And then Australia.
Yes, for
And then
5
only
years.
In COVID does Eve come back.
It's true.
This is correct.
I was gone for a long time. I was pretty mad at my family.
She was doing really well in Melbourne.
In Australia.
Really?
Eve was so much more accomplished than me.
It's true. Yeah.
Eve was on a, before COVID, really on a rocket ship to doing very well in Australia.
Uh-huh.
And the business wouldn't touch me.
It's true.
I was an unpleasant person. And I've done a lot of work on myself. But
well, then during COVID, I think a lot of people, including me, I don't know about you, but you feel like I've been robbed. Things were going so well. I had to start over.
I was so happy that the world shut down. I had nothing going for me at all.
Right.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, only because it's COVID and we've talked about so many Jewish things, but I was in the Hasidic section of Melbourne.
Malvern?
South by St. Kilda.
Yeah, I know what it is. What is it again?
Yeah, it might be Melbourne.
It's not Melbourne.
It's absolutely all gone now. But I was there, and everyone was packing up. And it was just happened to be where we were.
Yeah.
But it was, and we knew we were going into lockdown, and it was just my family and about 100 Hasidic families.
Yeah, perfect.
Dragging things off the shelves into our, and there was some things, because it was a normal Coles as well that just had a big kosher section.
And Coles is a supermarket.
So Coles had a big supermarket, but there were a lot of things that I could take that other people went, you know.
Right, that's true. You got all the ham.
Probably did very well on that ham section, that day.
All but what?
All the ham. Because he was living in a religious neighborhood, but it was a normal supermarket. And so they went into lockdown, but they had to keep kosher.
But the Hasidic thing, I have a great affinity and love for the Hasidic people.
Right, because James thinks that...
Eve hates them.
I think. You don't like Hasidic. The Hasidic Judaism.
Well, if they're short.
Yeah.
The more secular mainline Jewish people have such disgust...
For
the Hasidic.
Even today, I was around a Hasidic man. I went to the doctor this morning, and a Hasidic man came in, and he was older, so I was trying to be patient. And he stood in, there was like a little hallway. Like, it wasn't a hallway, but it was like, there was no gap. And he stood there completely, he was talking to his wife.
Yeah.
And he just was blocking me. And he looked at me, and he knew he was blocking me. And then he turned back to talk to her. And I said, "Excuse me, sir." And he, you know, and maybe he wasn't fully with it, but finally I had to go, "Excuse me, sir." I get so rude with Hasidic
you
people.
You do get very rude with Hasidic
people. But that's because...
I see them, I think, that's a cool hat.
Right.
I see you sitting here, ugh.
But this is the thing, I get rude with them because I treat them like people, you know, and they are...
I've been accused of this before.
What?
Of like, having low expectations.
Right. People, look at these cute little Jews.
People get angry at me for not getting angry enough at black people behaving a certain way. Because they go, hold them to a higher standard.
Right.
Come on.
Well, I think it's like... with the Hasidics, I think it's like... They just treat women like shit. You know what it is? I think that being super...
Some of the wigs are beautiful.
I think that being super religious is like, makes you... It's kind of like a learned autism. That's how I really feel about it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about by autism? Where it's like...
Yeah.
And they become... Because you have to become numb to all of your feelings. All you can do, and all they do all day, they daven, they pray all day, they rock back and forth, right? You can attest to this.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, it's not about your will. It's not about what's in your heart. It's not about what you want to do with your life or how you feel about this food or if you're hungry. You do what you're told to do. You wear the clothes. And so then you get these people who are just completely blocked out to everything except for
I think it's good to have a little of that. We've had the 60s revolution. We've had now it's time to push it back down again.
Yeah.
So that a new thing can break forward.
Says the weird mountain man, like just with the crazy hair and the...
Well, you know, in the Jewish religion, you've got to face the east.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I...
Well, east from here. You got to face Jerusalem.
My sense of direction is terrible. And I say, now you tell me, you know, I used to pray. It didn't matter I liked that rear window because there was a tomato across the street.
You know tomatoes, right?
Yeah. Is that a sexy
woman.
All right.
Yeah. A real tomato. I like to watch her in the morning.
I'll be using that on the train.
I'm saying my prayers,
back.
You know, and well, celebrating.
When I make fun of you, when you're going, oh, that woman, look at that.
I don't talk in that way.
But I'm doing my father, an impression of my father. Oh.
There was one lady at Five Guys.
At
the burger place who had a big bum.
Last night, there
that's
was
all.
A
I
big
meant,
bum.
I said, wow, big. Wow.
He said to me last night, we went and got a burger, and he goes, look at her. Wow, that's a big butt.
I didn't say look at her.
But then I was like, oh, there she is.
Now, hold on.
I always pretended to be you.
The context is the other guys at Five Guys, the other people working at this burger place, were also looking at this coworker, and one of them got her to clean stuff and was taking
pictures.
Photos of her. He was going, get in there, clean that wall.
Yeah, turn around.
We need you to clean over there now. Oh, and I couldn't believe it as it was happening.
Right, because of her butt. Yeah. But James, right, so fine.
It wasn't exclusively me making a sexual point.
Right, but my impression of you in those moments, when you said to me, you were like, I don't have that. I don't sound like a creepy man.
And you're doing an impression
of
your
father. But I'm doing an impression of my father.
A tomato.
It was a real tomato.
I'm going to
say. We were in the back of our car. We were necking. You know what necking is? We were heavy petting, and I go, please stop telling me.
Did you ever see the Andy Warhol thing come through? Because I mean, I realized you would have been here at the time.
I saw his movies.
You saw the movies? I didn't know. I never want to go and see the movies.
Oh, his movies were the worst.
I saw them all. Who's the guy who lost his jaw? Roger Ebert? Roger Ebert. Is he the film critic?
Oh, who lost?
But he goes, this man has nothing. He goes about Andy Warhol. He goes, this man has nothing to say. He just wants to make movies, and he does, and we have to put up with them. But I've never seen an Andy Warhol movie. But you saw them all?
Oh, yeah. With a friend, we went there, and they were terrible, just terrible.
Why did you keep going?
I don't know. We wanted to grade them, but...
Was this a PJ?
No, it was another friend.
PJ was my cousin.
Were they just in cinemas around town, by the way? Like, where would you?
Been.
Yeah, this movie theater was showing all Warhol stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. But I mean, let me tell you, it was a scene in bed with a guy and a gal. You say, wow, something could happen here. But whenever they said anything and whispered in each other, it was muted. It was deliberately distorted. And we sit there, and they do that for hours. Time goes by. Nothing. And he turns over. I mean, what the hell? What the hell? You know? I mean, we couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But there was another one where this couple was in bed.
Okay, I need you to do this.
Okay, couple was in bed.
Move your elbow. There you go. Rest it right there.
Yeah. All right.
So it's the controlling.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But I want you to be able to hear him.
And this woman's mother comes in.
Yeah.
And finds them in bed.
Mm-hmm.
So what does she do? She gets in bed with them and she gives them a lecture. You shouldn't be having sex. Pointing on them.
And you can't hear anything.
Well,
you just hear
saw her face.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing.
But this goes for hours. No plot.
Oh, it goes on. It goes on and on. Now, I read somewhere where he used a lot of people from his factory.
Yeah.
The art factory?
They called it The Factory.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know.
But Eddie Sedgwick, is that right?
Oh, Edie Sedgwick, right? Edie Sedgwick?
I don't know. Maybe I'm getting it wrong. But all these are the superstars. That's where the superstars come from. And then also the Velvet Underground come through. I mean, they must have really... That era, I guess up until 1980... Lennon is shot in 1980. And then maybe there's a shift after that.
Well, one of his people stabbed him, you know.
Lennon? Warhol, the feminist woman.
Yeah. Yeah,
but don't forget that
she became homeless later.
Shocking, but in 80, my dad was already 45 years old. So a lot of that. No, you were. So you were kind of at some point. You weren't as interested in.
Well,
that
you were only a little. So Lennon was 40 when he got shot. This. You were only a little bit older than John.
Yeah.
But you must have. I mean, when the Beatles came through.
Yeah.
And the girls start going insane.
Yeah.
And you were a little older than.
Oh, yeah.
That cohort, but I mean what. What the heck was going on there? I mean, what is happening to the... Were people very repressed before and then they're not? That's always the point in the movie where it goes from black and white to Technicolor.
Which movie?
In every movie, there's like a black and white section and then it's...
But that's what happened in that...
People see James Brown dancing and all of a sudden it's...
But that's what happened in that exhibit we saw too, the Paul McCartney one.
When they're in Miami.
So we just saw an exhibit in Toronto this weekend. And so it was like... The Beatles from Paul McCartney's perspective. He had a camera and everything was in black and white. And then they came to the US and did the Ed Sullivan show, which was their big moment. And then all the photos switched to color. But that's like the culture as well.
Did it feel like that at all? Or was it, you know, it seems like it was fairly debauched beforehand in certain places, but not maybe in the media.
Do you know what we're asking?
Excuse me.
You know what we're asking?
That cultural shift.
Yeah, the culture shift of the 60s.
Well, when they came over from Liverpool, it was like exotic, you know?
Yeah.
Who are these? Liverpool, where was that? That was the first thing. But when they started to sing after a while, you saw that these guys were really talented.
Right.
But some of the people, like my cousin Selma,
Irving's daughter.
She goes crazy. Oh, I couldn't. Oh, it's like she's having sex in her head with him.
Right. So this is what it seems odd. That reaction seems.
strange to you.
Strange to me. But unless people were maybe repressed beforehand. Well,
so that's the point. Is like, did you feel that the culture before the Beatles or before the '60s was very kind of buttoned up?
Well, look, we had the. What the hell's his name? Ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Elvis.
Yeah.
Selma was crazy about Elvis. When he sang some of his songs, when he did his thing with the legs and all that, She was so happy. She almost cried. There were like tears.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's like a cult. Yeah. Like, but it's like, imagine now. Some people do that. People, the only other person I know that people would do that for is Michael Jackson. People would faint, you know, and cry, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, but he had to take it to such a strange level.
Yes, he had to hold
costumes
his,
and dancing and
yes,
and weird,
yeah,
weird triumph of the will iconography. And
yeah,
he's also wearing a Nazi jacket.
Yes,
you know, oh like God. He's doing everything he can. Right. He's a statue,
right? And oh, he starts a ranch for children,
a child ranch.
Yeah, a child ranch where he can. Yeah. Yeah,
it is nice being back in America where. People agree with me that he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, right.
Not everybody, but some people agree.
Yes, yeah.
But well, now it seems like there's nothing. This is why
that,
I
heard that he snores.
Yeah. I mean,
true on the drugs he was on?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
He snores. Yeah.
It's impossible for me to imagine something getting that sort of reaction now.
Yeah.
The Beatles, like the Beatles.
Well, like the Beatles, like Elvis. Even like Michael Jackson or Elvis, that everything is so... The most people can do is maybe get a negative reaction.
I'll right. tell you when it started.
Dad,
it started
your microphone.
Oh, my yeah. microphone. Oh.
Here, just move your arm up, and that way your hand won't get tired. Yeah.
It started with Sinatra.
Okay.
You know, he's so dreamy, and he would sing these songs, you know, in his way. And, I mean, the people, and then it was furthered by the media. They have a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
And especially when I saw that there were gals who were crying and wanted to touch him. Some of them were passing out. I mean, it's amazing. But that's kind of like, you know, I would say repressed sexuality. But I don't know if it's that. I think it's just the, I think a lot of it is also the crowd. It's contagious.
Yeah.
They're in that crowd and they start something, start swooning. And it's like, the whole thing becomes like a movement.
Yes.
So I was always fascinated with that. And I'm just trying to think if there's an equal, if there's a gal that I ever fawned over. That, you know, that
I think men have the same reaction to a lady.
A lot of those feelings are very private.
But I also, you know. But you
well,
one,
that's right.
One yeah, thinks, yeah, yeah. You think of sort of the Nazis and the youth movement, and right. all of a sudden, yeah. big crowds are showing up right. places, yeah. and young people are getting together in big groups.
Right.
And that's there is a parallel there.
Yeah,
between that and popular music of this, the Volk and some feeling.
It's interesting because, I guess in Germany at the time it was based on anger and hatred, whereas then you have the Beatles and Elvis and whatever, and it's based on this excitement.
So, like, punk music, though, is not about, you know, kumbaya and good feeling.
Right. And but it's a way to vent your feelings or a place to put them.
Having a big collective subconscious.
Yeah.
Maybe now it's too fragmented and people don't feel the same things. This
well,
is really
now
what
I
I'm hung up on.
My feeling about now is that people are on all these medications to numb their feelings.
Yeah.
On antidepressants and tranquilizers and birth control, whatever. But it does change it so that you don't find, you don't need catharsis in the same way because you're so numb.
Yeah. Well, whereas, maybe there's no hope of changing.
That's true. Things.
I don't.
Well, I mean, partially because of the depression. I think antidepressants have stopped us from evolving the culture.
I look at Mamdani.
Ugh.
Well, I don't have the same problems with
you
Mamdani.
Like Mamdani. You like Mamdani. I don't like him. You
oh,
like,
all right. Okay. Yeah.
This one, you hate Mamdani.
Yeah, yeah.
She was a Sliwa fan. She loved Sliwa.
Oh, good God.
Who was the other? I don't even remember.
It was Cuomo. I mean,
she loves Cuomo. She would say.
I love Cuomo. You like Cuomo. You like Cuomo.
Which one?
Andrew Cuomo, who recently ran. I mean, look, I don't love Cuomo because of all the allegations against him and
he's
stuff.
Italian.
You know, remember how all these women.
I know, but it's not a love hate kind of thing.
Yeah. But I think. I still liked him more than Mamdani. I'm really. I know people think that Cuomo is such a nod to the past. I think Mamdani is a charlatan, and I think he doesn't like
Even
Jews.
And then what he's offering? No, he definitely.
He does not like Jews.
He doesn't like Catholics either. He
right.
didn't come to the new archbishop. He's got his people.
Right. Right.
Do you know, he's got his people.
But you know why I think that, right? That he doesn't like Jews.
No, why?
Well, he just. I mean, the first thing. Anyway, I guess I.
Well, I don't know if he likes or dislikes. I mean, he's tried to stay kind of neutral. Is what he. Politically,
that's how he presents himself. Yeah.
So I don't know him that well.
Yeah.
The Brooklynite Adam Friedland faction is a big fan.
Adam Friedland is a Jewish comedian podcaster. Uh-huh.
He'd be our leading
Yeah.
anti-Zionist.
Dad, do you want to up to you.
Oh no! At some point, we got one minute. We got 1 minute.
Well, I was gonna say, do you want to tell any jokes?
Yes, I was gonna ask because we are making. I'm making a movie, and I'm doing a section at the start with jokes overlaid. So if you have any jokes you would like to tell,
your favorite jokes.
I heard this one about the skinny woman.
Which one?
The skinny prostitute.
Oh, I told you that. You tell it because it's better. Oh, he told you or I told you?
You told me. I don't. But
the one about the guy who gets the thinnest prostitute.
See what happens when they don't eat.
Yeah.
But if you would tell, and I'll put my microphone down.
Yeah, you tell
and
the
then
joke.
If I could take the audio. What I would like is the start of the movie is people telling jokes laid over. Anyway, it's hard to describe.
So you want
to
do an isolated.
You know, in Manhattan where he's doing shots of the city. I'll do that with my small town.
Okay.
But it'll be a series of different people telling jokes.
So tell a.
But would you tell the skinny prostitute joke?
Well, I could, but there's another one that I'm thinking of.
Okay.
Tell as many as you'd like, as long as you go by it.
Okay. Well,
you have to move your mic close to your mouth.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Mr. Finney was coming home from work, and as he was coming home, he passed this store, and the boy said, "Psst, psst, come over here, come over here." And he looked up, and it was this guy who was a salesman. He's one of these spiffy guys. So he said, "Get away from me, get away from me. I'm not going to buy anything." And the guy said, "Look, I know you just got paid. I know you just got paid. Today's a payday. But I have something for you that's special." He says, "Get out of here with special. I don't want a special. I just want to go home. I want to get my soup." He says, "Look, just take a look. It wouldn't hurt." And he opens the door a little bit, and he looks in, and he sees an elephant. He says, "What's with the elephant?" He says, "That's the biggest thing going." He says, "You buy this elephant, everybody will say, 'Wow. He's living in an apartment building, a 15th floor. What am I going to do with an elephant?' He probably wouldn't fit in the elevator." He says, "He will." He says, "I measured." He says, "You measured? I measured. He'll fit. Don't worry. Don't worry." He says, "Look, the one thing I don't want, and I'm not going to buy it, is I don't want an elephant. What can I do with an elephant? It's ridiculous." He says, "I'll tell you what." He says, "Just give me $100. I'll turn around. It's such a deal you wouldn't believe. And you take the elephant, just walk away. I don't care." He says, "It's worth a lot more." He says, "I'm not going to buy anything from you, you crook." He says, "You thief, I'm not going to buy anything from you." So he starts walking away, and he says, wait a minute. "I'll tell you what. Instead of $100, I'll give you two for $150. And he whirls around and he says, "Now you're talking. I'll take it. I'll take it."